Well, very little vexes like the traffic and the traffic around Letterkenny in particular over the last day or two. And we always welcome your voice notes, by the way. And here is what one listener has to say.
Read the road situation, Greg. It's like they're turning a town that's progressing towards a city into a town that's more like a village. Like, so, see the traffic stuff they're setting up there? It's like someone you see in a village. So it is. Where they're trying to reduce the speed down and all that stuff and reduce lanes down instead of expanding lanes and making things wider. So it is, I don't know, who's councillors, if they're powerless, there's no need for them. Do away with them. If they're crying the radio to you, have no control of their own areas, it's time to get rid of the councillors.
All right, okay. Well, in fairness, the councillor in question did vote against the active travel plans, but I take your point and we appreciate your voice notes as well. 086 60 25,000. Get them into us or just call us, whichever way you prefer. Right, the Mental Health Commission is looking to hear from users of the Child and Adolescent Mental Health Services. It's launched a public consultation to help inform new standards for CALMS. John Farrelly is Chief Executive of the Mental Health Commission. He's with me now. John, good morning.
Good morning, how are you?
I am good. Now, obviously the services have been heavily scrutinised in recent times. We're hearing of difficulties in getting referrals to them, really long waiting lists, you know, maybe not the best oversight in the world. How do you see the CALMS services as they are?
Well, I suppose, first of all, we do not regulate the current community CALM services, so we have no oversight of them whatsoever. It's a matter for the HSC and at the moment. So the new law that's coming through is going to give us powers, because we have the powers to register, oversee, set standards for inpatients, including CAMs, and they actually do quite well. So it really is for us, we want to make sure on foot of what happened in the community CAMs, really, that we get the powers under the Act, which the government are pushing through. But part of that is, before you register, you want to make sure that everyone is clear on what an appropriate standard is. And really, that's why we're reaching out now. The first point for us is develop these standards. And we want to hear from the people who've been receiving CAMs, the people who interact with CAMs, particularly the voice of young people and their families, so that we can set good standards.
In terms of the delivery under the new system, you know, will you have to operate within a certain funding model or what have you? Do you know what I mean? Because there's one thing sort of establishing what needs to be done or where there might be gaps and introducing a new way of doing things. But if that is hamstrung, you know, in terms of staffing or funding in general, really it could be, it's not a wasted exercise, but certainly a hampered exercise.
No, that's a fair point. Look, it's an integration of a few things, but ultimately the key thing coming out of, from our point of view, is that there is regulation and oversight. So, for example, if something happens in a CAMS inpatient unit, we know directly what's going on. We're able to look, we're able to investigate, we're able to set rules and regulations for those CAMS inpatients. So really what you're trying to do is avoid things going wrong. And also, if you look at what's happening across the system, so there's whole new structures being set up. Integration is a key word. So it's this idea of making sure that we can set standards so that the services apply those standards. And to apply those standards, the services are going to have to be funded. So I know it sounds like, you know, a full administrative mechanism, but by setting a standard of care that's required, they will then have to be funded. At the moment, there really is no standards around it. Again, the HSC have their own, you know, operating rules, etc. But we want to make sure that the regulator sets the rules, and then we will monitor to make sure that those rules are implemented.
Yeah, how long do you think this process might take?
Well, the Act is coming through now. Hopefully now the Act will be signed off by the end of the year. And we wanted to kind of get a head start and get the, and the Minister asked us to do the standards early. So I think we'd have the standards ready next year for when we get the powers of regulation. Now, look, apart from that, you know, the HSE, after what happened in Kerry and the different things around it, and our own review of CAMHS. They've been doing a lot of work to try and get CAMHS services right. And I suppose one of the things we want to do is hear from people, and I suppose people who might be in other services, because you hear from people saying, well, I never got my appointment or waiting list, etc. So we want to hear as much as possible, because we want to make sure that we learn people aren't in queues in other areas while they're waiting for CAMHS. So as much as possible at this stage, we just want to really hear the voice of the person, families, people who are involved, and really set about getting these standards in place.
All right. If you want further information, you can email standards at mhcirl.ie. We've got telephone numbers here as well, and you have until 5 p.m. on Friday the 28th of November. We'll get that information, as I say, we'll hold it here for people to ring us. They're more familiar with our numbers, and we'll get it out to people if they're interested. Thanks, John.
No, thank you very much. Right. Thank you very much.
Bye-bye. Bye. John Farrelly, Chief Executive of the Mental Health Commission. $1.6 billion was the budget for 2026 in the budget for mental health services. So the money seems to be there. It's about how it's spent, I suppose. My daughter was late for school this morning because at 20 to 9 we were at the old Oatfield Road and we were at Errigal College at 5 past 9. It's insane. That journey should only take 5 or 6 minutes. It took 25 minutes. Morning, Greg. Regarding Ashlawn, if the more people living in Ashlawn would attend the meetings, they would get the council to look at ways to avoid the traffic coming through Ashlawn. Hi, Greg. Stopped going to Letterkenny because it's a complete disaster. They have Letterkenny destroyed. The amount of people is staying away from Letterkenny is unreal because of the traffic. Thanks, they say. On the issue of sport and how we do sport, a caller says, should the management and team be roaring and shouting and not all nice at their teams as well? Of course, and as part of the silent sidelines, that would stop. They would be told not to. Another, last night's crowd at the Aviva must have been listening to Jen. It was like being in a library, perhaps reflecting standard of play on the pitch. Okay, I like that one, but at least it was a win. Thank you very much indeed. Does anyone know why there are no UK channels on TV for the past week or so, Lismonahan area? No signal from BBC, Channel 4, etc. Only RTE. Anyone else have the issue? Well, I presume you've retuned. If it's a digital tuner and you're getting them from, say, the north, they might have adjusted the frequencies. So I certainly would retune that element of it. If it's the satellite, you can also retune that, but that could be a different problem altogether. Let me know if you've tried to retune or if you're getting them via an aerial or a satellite. I got my voting card yesterday, says a listener. At 78, this is the first time I cannot vote. I've nobody to vote for. Presidential election is supposed to be non-party, which makes this election, they say, a joke. Greg, just want to highlight something regarding the traffic in Letterkenny. One thing I think they should look at on the Port Road, a footbridge over the Port Road to allow the students across from the car park to ATU. Them lights at the ATU and congestion, the traffic right up to the Polestar from where when students start to arrive. I reckon it would definitely help the flow if a footbridge was in place or even underneath. We've a wee tunnel underneath to our national school under the main road in Lahey. So anyway, listen, loads of you texting in. Keep them coming in. They're very much appreciated. Did you know only 32.6% of disabled people in Ireland are in employment? And in Donegal, it's only 28.9%. This compared to an EU average of 51.3%. So we're lagging well behind. The Donegal Centre for Independent Living, Letterkenny, Put Us to Work campaign is supported by the council and seeks to improve employment opportunities for people with a disability and address the barriers and prejudices where they exist that prevent many disabled people from finding meaningful, rewarding and permanent employment. We've got three guests with us. Mo Farah, good morning, Mo. Thanks so much for your time.
Yeah, good morning. Thank you so much for you inviting me.
No, it's great to have you with us. Mark Henderson's there too. Hi, Mark.
Good morning, Greg. How are you?
Good to chat to you. And we also have Jonathan McLaughlin, Operations Manager at the Donegal Centre for Independent Living. How are you?
Good.
I mean, these gaps are wide. Is it urban versus rural, or is it literally just our how we do things in this country, Jonathan, versus our European neighbours?
Well, as you see, the national average, like Donegal, is below the national average, but I think across the country, there's huge barriers that people with disabilities face in gaining employment, and this is what this campaign wants to do, is to highlight those barriers. There's a lot of them, and there's a lot of challenges, But we feel that some of these barriers can be overcome. And as part of this campaign, we want to raise awareness about that. And it was important for us that the campaign was led by people with lived experience. And that's why Mark and Mo is leading out in the campaign as people with disabilities who have had trouble gaining employment.
Yeah, and I'm looking forward to chatting to them in a moment. But, you know, do we know... We're at full employment in this country, yeah, and we still are. There's still jobs growth in the market. Do we know if we are empowering or facilitating disabled people to seek employment the same as other countries, or are employers less likely to opt for someone with a disability, if you know what I mean?
So I think there is... On the employer side, there is maybe a lack of knowledge or awareness of the supports that are actually available for employers, and that's something that we want to highlight in the campaign. So there's benefits as such for employers. There is things in place like wage subsidy schemes. There's adaptation grants for employers to adapt their premises to, for example, put in a wheelchair accessible ramp. Toilets. But I don't think employers in the county know about that enough. I also think we talk about this in the campaign that there's many barriers, and there's a lot of physical barriers, but there's also attitudinal barriers. So we feel like certain people may look at someone coming in presenting for interview and they're in a wheelchair or they're blind, and they immediately think that this person isn't suitable for it.
That's a disadvantage from the get-go, really.
Disadvantage from the get-go.
Yeah.
And what we say is leave the bias at the door. Now, there is employers that have a positive approach to hiring people with disabilities in the county, and that's another thing that we want to highlight in the campaign, to show that there is businesses here that have a positive approach to this, and they're very successful in that. And you know, it's benefiting both the business and the job seeker.
Mo Farah, as I mentioned, is one of our other two guests. He's a service user with the Donegal Centre for Independent Living. Mo, you know, as a human rights advocate and looking for improvements for the rights of people with disabilities, it's very frustrating, isn't it, to see how far we're lagging behind, you know, comparable countries?
Absolutely, absolutely. I wasn't expecting, because of currently I'm new to Ireland myself. I've been living in Ireland for 3.5 years, and I was expecting that Ireland is more advanced than what I was expecting. But right now, when I have seen how people with disability are facing challenges in terms of accessibility, in terms of employment, in terms of housing, so I see there is a very, very big gap that needs to be filled by the government. So in a work place, people with disability is a little bit far away than the other people. As you mentioned, the statistic is 28.9% in Donegal and 33 in the whole Ireland is very, very low according to the European Union, which is 50+.
Yeah, what challenges have you faced in seeking employment, or is it more observing what other people's situations were?
Yeah, I think the challenges is the main challenge is one of the barriers is negative attitude barrier. And also,
so you're judged straight away, in other words, right? Before you even have an opportunity to talk of your skill sets or what you can bring to a company, you feel that you're already being judged as a disadvantage.
Yeah, absolutely, yeah. Absolutely. There is two attitudes from the employer, and even some of the disabled people who are looking for the job, they have a negative attitude in their mind. They think they will never get, because they have been treated this way for many years.
Yeah, so they're
already
to think
disappointed.
That's the case. Yeah, I get you.
Yeah. So that's one of the attitude. The other one is direct or indirect discrimination. Also, accessibility in the workplace is one of them. And there are more that we can conclude in just one session or one interview.
Yeah, and Mark Anderson, the key point here, I feel, as well, is that no one's looking for special treatment.
No, 100%. No one, as we've highlighted, and I don't know if you've seen the campaign video, but one of the things we've said is we're not looking for special treatment, we're looking for equal treatment. So that's the point that we're making here. We're not looking for special treatment or give us the job because we have a disability. Just treat us the same as you would treat any other candidate for the job.
Yeah, because, I mean, you have achieved a lot. Your love of sports and training up in that regard. You know, you've got all the drive in the world. You just need the opportunities. Not you specifically, but people, you know, that we're talking about today.
Yeah, 100%. Like, I've got a level 8 degree and probably more than most people in employment at the minute, and because of the wheelchair and whatever else, and then I'm not being given the opportunity.
Which it must be very frustrating.
It is absolutely very frustrating, but I suppose you learn to deal with it, I suppose. But
well, you learn to take it.
Accept it, I suppose.
Yeah, which you shouldn't have to.
Yeah.
You know, that shouldn't be part of...
No.
That shouldn't be part of the journey, should it?
No, definitely not.
Did you want to come in there, Jonathan?
No, I'm just saying that, yeah, the kind of highlighting what Mark and Mo were saying is that there's a lot of people with, you know, they've gone through their education, they've got to themselves to a high level and are employable, and it's just, you know, we're just hoping that the employers now will come in behind that and see that these are people that are ready to work, and that's why we called the campaign Put Us to Work, because we are ready.
Mark, what would you ideally like to be working? What space would you like to be working in?
My qualification, my degree is in sports coaching and performance, so ideally around that. But I'm ready to work in whatever capacity.
Yeah, there's transferable skills, isn't there?
Exactly.
Yeah.
I'm ready to work in whatever capacity I'm given.
Yeah.
Society's expensive nowadays, Greg, so money is needed.
You just love the money, man. He just wants the green. Mo, what about you? I know you're strong in the advocacy area, and would you like to maybe actually pursue a career in advocacy, or what else would interest you?
Yeah, absolutely. I have been working in advocacy area for many years, and that's one of my hobbies, that I like to contribute to the society and to raise awareness for people with disability in any kind they are. And also, I like to work for the community worker to support my community in Donegal. So that's one of my the things that I need to work for in the future.
You know, we've been talking this morning, and I'm not trying to pitch you guys against cyclists, don't get me wrong, but we've been talking this morning about, you know, a multi-million euro accessible travel scheme for Letterkenny, whereby new lanes have been put in here, there and everywhere, and this is for cyclists and pedestrians, in a sense that, you know, it's not, the time's not right for that here. Out of interest, what's accessibility like around, what, are you based in Letterkenny, Mo?
Yes.
Right, so if you want to get about independently in Letterkenny, right, as a wheelchair user, what's it like?
Letterkenny is not the way it was before. Last 2 years, we have been working also accessibility, auditing accessibility in Letterkenny to check the pavement, the roadside, is how it's improved, what we need to do. And we have raised a lot of concern to the council that they need to move to do it more accessible for the roadsides. So we appreciate any activities or any support that building to the roadsides to make it more safe, how people with disability, easy for them to reach where they want it independently.
Mark?
Can I just say, one of the main barriers that I found from getting employment is, again, an accessible transport thing, where the local link buses are, there's not one of them that are accessible.
I can't remember the minister responsible for this, but she was on a couple of years ago or last year, and she was talking about how many new buses were coming into service. And I think she had a dual mandate with disability as well. And I asked her how many would be, and also how many would be electric, but that was a separate point. And the answer was none. And I'm like, wow, these are new vehicles. You know, there's one thing speaking, right? But action is what counts, isn't it?
I personally don't drive, so when I'm applying for jobs, it technically limits me to the Letterkenny area, because if I was to work outside of the Letterkenny area, then I'm out my day's wages paying for taxis or transport to and from.
So even if a potential job was on a route, you can't really get on and off the bus.
Yeah. 100%. It's physically impossible for me to get on and off the bus.
All right. I mean, Jonathan, I know we are trying to get some stuff better, like, you know, increasing employment from 28.9% to the European average of 51.3%. But we seem to be spending money in the wrong places. You know, we need to make the town, the county, the country, you know, fair for everybody in terms of accessibility and movement.
Yeah. And I feel like as a disability organisation, we do feel that sometimes people with the disabilities are kind of second thought or left behind when it comes to planning for these type of things. We had the successful launch of the disability, the Put Us to Work campaign last week, and there was a lot of stakeholders in the room. We got a good crowd. There was a lot of energy. But the feedback and the kind of comments in the room was there's work been done, but we can do a lot better.
Do you know what you need to do? You need to get three or four councillors and stick them in a wheelchair. And no, seriously. And ask them to go around Letterkenny and then ask them to get on a local link bus. Literally sitting in the chair.
I've been on with you lately, Greg, speaking about the traffic congestion I'd done with Mary T. Sweeney over the Old Town. Over the Old Town. And I've challenged the councillors to sit in my wheelchair and take their lives into their own hands.
Literally, going onto the road. Do it. Like, well, so, because you can only fully understand if you experience, right? So try and access certain buildings, try and cross the road, try and get up that drop curb that's still 2 inches off the ground.
Yeah.
Or get in and out of your area down the bottom of the town.
Yeah. My I get laughed at when I say that, but I was deadly serious. If anyone wants to, if any councillor listening here now wants to do this, then
you can have the chair for an hour.
I'll borrow you my chair, no problem. I won't even charge the rent and fees.
Cheaper than a taxi. All right. Mo, working with the Donegal Centre for Independent Living, how has that helped you in your life?
Yeah, absolutely. It helps my life and it makes us more independently, financially, emotionally and physically. And I do appreciate for the whole staff who have been working together and also for the managers and all the board directors. It improves my life and I become very financially independent when I joined them.
That's okay. That's good to hear. Jonathan, we're going to play out with the video that he's put together from the Donegal Centre for Independent Living. Anything you want to say finally?
No, just that if people, this is a kind of an awareness raising campaign, so we want people to share the video. We're going to be creating a lot of content over the next 4 weeks, so follow us on our social media, Donegal Centre for Independent Living, where we're going to be highlighting the challenges, the barriers, but also putting spotlights on the supports available and also those employers that are doing good in our community.
Okay, Jonathan McLaughlin, Operations Manager at the Donegal Centre for Independent Living. Mark Anderson, thanks very much.
Thanks very much.
If you come on the show much more often, you'll be a co-presenter at this stage. And keep at it, though. And Mo, thank you.
Thank you so much.
Okay, thanks, we'll play out. I'm not sure how this works audibly, but we'll play out with this video too from Independent Living.
I have a degree in sports coaching with performance and I graduated in 2020. Since then I've applied for numerous jobs but haven't been successful. One of my recent interviews was in a place that didn't even have a disabled toilet, so it was immediately clear that even if I got offered the jobs, it wasn't somewhere that I was going to be able to work.
People make assumptions all the time about me and my capabilities, especially when it comes to employment. The truth is, just because I can't see doesn't mean I can't work. When it comes to getting a job, people see the cane and not my potential.
I was recently successful in my job search and was offered a position at a local company. Unfortunately, I was unable to take up the position because their building wasn't accessible for me.
I have a master's degree in human rights and development and over 10 years experience. In the last 6 months, I have applied for the roles and I was fully qualified for, but I was rejected. I believe my disability played a part.
I've been looking for a job since I was 18. I've had help with my CV and interview, but whenever I get a job interview, I feel like nobody taking me seriously.
I want to be employed, not just for myself, but to give back to the community. People judge my ability by what they see, not what I can do. I don't want sympathy. I want an opportunity.
people with disabilities in Donegal are ready to work. What we lack isn't ability, it's opportunity. In Ireland, just 32.6% of people with disabilities are employed. That's one of the lowest rates in Europe. Here in Donegal, it's even lower, with only 28.9% in employment.
At DCL, we believe this is not just a social issue.
It's a human rights issue. Employment gives me more than a wage. It brings me independence and a sense of purpose within the community.
That's why we have teamed up with Donegal County Council to launch the
Push Hard to Work campaign.
We don't want special treatment. We want equal treatment.
We're not just ready to work. We're ready to contribute. Through the Put Us to Work campaign, we're asking employers to focus on people's abilities rather than their disabilities. We don't want to see people just survive. We want to see them thrive in their careers. We want to see them reach their full potential.
What we're asking for is equality.
Put us to work.
Put us to work.
Put us to work.
Carmwidge Egober.
Put us to work. We're ready.
Would you like to join Highland Radio's award-winning news and current affairs team? We're seeking a full-time journalist. The successful applicant will be integral to the delivery of local news and current affairs across our broadcast and digital platforms. The role is highly hands-on and requires a keen interest in the issues and people of our community. You can apply by forwarding your CV to greghughes@highlandradio.com or by post to Head of News, Highland Radio, Mountaintop, Letterkenny, County Donegal. Applications close on Friday the 17th of October. Yeah, brilliant opportunity to join our news team in a full-time capacity as well. If you're interested and you have the experience, get in touch with us. GregHughesIslandRadio.com will post it in. Right now, Chris Ashmore is presenter of Highland Radio's Business Matters podcast, and he is in situ with me. Good morning, Chris.
Good morning, Greg.
How was your week?
Very good. Great weather, isn't it?
It is, yeah. It's,
everybody
it's
in good form.
Yeah, it's calm. Right, let's get to some news. Major engineering firm in Letterkenny going to become even more major.
Indeed. Now, this is a firm called Cora Consulting Engineers, based in Dublin, but they've expanded to the northwest and have recently officially opened their premises, which is within the CoLab Innovation Centre at the Atlantic Technology University. And the company is involved in a range of civil and structural engineering projects, both public and private sector. And it's currently recruiting to, it's looking for engineers and technicians and an opportunity for our graduates to join them. They already employ 40 people, so they are expanding here in the Northwest. So that's a nice positive note to start on.
Any jobs for me there?
And what's your engineering background?
I can bluff my way in.
Right, we'll have a look at the CV and see what happens.
big conference, big golfing conference. This is a huge, this is a hugely valuable area of the tourism market. They're big spenders, generally speaking, yeah. And we have such an infrastructure here for them.
Well, absolutely. And now, in the recent days, there's been a major conference that was held in Sligo. Falsha Ireland hosting it, and at the conference it was essentially a showcase of the golf courses in the Northwest. And what they were doing, they were bringing together the tour operators, the golf providers, as they call them, and those in the industry, getting them to meet with people from the courses up here, a great networking event, showing them what we have to offer, bringing them out. And as you touched on there, and this is the really significant thing, that the average golf visitor, average, as we always put people into their little categories, but they spend on average 2.5 times what a so-called normal visitor spends coming to Ireland. Mm. So that's significant. And nationally, we're talking over 300 million to the economy. So these people are coming, they're spending a lot of money, they're generally staying in good quality accommodation. And that, of course, is all going to filter down through. And, and a lot of these golf courses, they can be in very rural areas. So does the employment side of it.
But, I mean, it's a win-win. If you start at the Leitrim Donegal border, Bundoran, it's got its own offering for golf course. Merva, Donegal Golf Club Merva, arguably one of the best courses in the country. Then you into the Ballybuffet, lovely parkland course, Letterkenny and other. And you haven't even ventured really further north than that. I mean, That is some offering just before you even get as far as
Ballyliffin,
Dunfanaghy,
Downings.
You know, it's unbelievable. Yeah.
And the Lynx courses have a particular appeal, particularly to a lot of the Americans who may live hundreds or thousands of miles from the sea.
But a great advantage of them too is that they are often very playable all year round.
Indeed.
Because of the nature of the topography with sand and what have you, they drain really well. So you get a good challenge no matter what time of the year you're playing.
Mm.
Right, tomorrow's National Women's Enterprise Day, because I know we were flagging up a big event in the great, in the Mount Argyle Hotel, I believe it is, and there's lots of other stuff happening. And I know this is stuff you keep an eye on all the time anyway, Chris.
Yeah, all sorts of things happening. But the big ticket event here in Donegal, as you mentioned, in the Mount Argyle Hotel, there'll be a range of speakers, a keynote speaker, Tessa Breslin, a leadership advisor, Miranda Rosenberg, who is really passionate, an advocate for personal empowerment. There's lots of speakers, a great networking event, and for those people who go to it, you know, who knows what doors it may open. There's more details on the Local Enterprise Office website, or indeed Donegal Women in Business Network, which continues to expand, and many of its members will be there as well.
Rightio. Two guests on your programme this week. Who is coming up first?
Yes, well, I've been speaking with Fiona Temple, who is principal of Mulroy College, and she's also been coordinating a working group behind the Donegal ETB's Enterprise Day. Now, this is a day for 17 secondary schools. It's been held in the ATU here in Letterkenny, and they are given an idea. They have to develop it, develop a business idea, and then there's a Dragon's Den side to it all. They have to pitch it, and winners are chosen. So it's a great experience, and we have a clip from her just explaining what it's all about.
We essentially are bringing young people together and introducing entrepreneurship in a fun way. And it's a real hands-on learning day. There's a number of people on the working committee who pull it all together, but it really couldn't happen without the expertise of our business people from our local community. So the teams themselves will be given a task. They will be given an innovation game, where basically they will be developing a product from the material that we provide them. They will have a period of time to work with a business mentor. And this is someone locally in Donegal who is currently running their own business, involved in a business, or has a wealth of experience in entrepreneurship or working in a business. And by lunchtime, they will have created a product. They will have a company. They will have looked at how they market, how they price, their customer profile, all of those details.
It's a great wee thing, that, Chris, on many levels, because it's you know, it's getting the creative juices flowing. It's building confidence. You have to stand up in front of people. You have to back yourself. You know, it's a win-win, that type of an event,
you know,
I believe.
Absolutely. And, you know, you're planting that entrepreneurial seed at an early age. And some of the people who are taking part, you know, who knows? This could well be the start of something that later years they may develop as a business. And there's a fun side to it as well. And even for the people taking part, you know, it's the fact that it's been hosted in the ATU, they're getting, maybe some of them haven't been in the campus before, so they're getting an idea about life at third level. So
that's an exciting time too, because, you know, what is going on at this time of year as well is the sixth class students in the national schools, they have the little visits to the big schools, or the schools coming into them, which school will it go to? And it's all at different levels, but kind of the same thing that's going on. Lovely. Lovely time of the year if you're in for all of that. Right, okay, second guest upon the show.
Second guest, I've been speaking to Fergus Sharkey, who is head of business supports at the Sustainable Energy Authority of Ireland, and he's been outlining the grants that are available. And they are significant, Greg, be you a small business or a large business. So we're talking about things like solar panels, your heating system, your lighting, the grants there. Well, they range right up to 450,000 for the bigger projects, but the whole system at the moment, it's been streamlined to make the process as relatively straightforward as you can, because they really are encouraging people to try and avail of these grants, and he's been telling us more.
If I could leave one message with your listeners, Chris, it's that there's been a significant transition for SEI supports to businesses in recent years. So there's a range of measures that you can apply for today and get approved today. So solar PV and solar thermal and heat pumps and insulation. And there's a range of other measures that are there that can get that instant rapid approval.
Chris, the one thing I've noticed too in speaking to very successful businesses in Donegal is that they were early adopters of, you know, sourcing their own water, sourcing their own power, you know, insulating the buildings in a certain way. Because there's a couple of tracks going on, isn't there? There's some that see it as a massive advantage for their business and don't need any hard sell on it at all. And then you can understand now why the SEAI are out there trying to get other businesses to come on board. But I think the strongest pro voices in this area are those that saw the advantages themselves and just cracked on before any initiatives or schemes. You know, every panel of the roof with a solar panel, as I say, sourcing their own water in a way which is environmentally friendly, understanding the big users of electricity, finding different ways of supplementing their power.
Yeah, they're ahead of the curve, and some of them have definitely reaped the rewards from that. Others maybe do need that little bit of the carrot to sort of get them over the line. Just interesting to note that the SEAI last year, for these business supports for energy improvement projects, they did hand out more than 170 businesses in Donegal availed of it, so not insignificant.
No, I think that's it's quite significant. Okay, much more from both Fiona Temple and Fergus Sharkey on the Business Matters podcast, which is available very shortly for you to listen at your leisure, download and listen at in your walk or your run or wherever you are. And it's also scheduled for broadcast after the 6 o'clock news on Sunday, if you choose to listen to it on the radio. And Chris, if anyone wants to get in contact with you, how should they go about doing so?
You can email me at businessmatters@highlandradio.com. And just if you're about next Wednesday for that Enterprise Day, it's on in the ATU in the Dunland building. It all gets underway at 3:30 and carries on to about 3 o'clock.
Lovely stuff, Chris. Thank you very much indeed. I really do appreciate that. And I'll come back to it. I was going to mention something else, but I'll come back to it after this break. Just a wee reminder for you that we are coming to the end of Baby Loss Awareness Week. And tonight is the Wave of Light, and you'll see a number of public buildings in Donegal being shone up in pink and blue, I believe it is, from 7 p.m. And it's to remember all the babies who died too soon. So this could be something that you're doing for yourself to remember your wee one, or maybe it could be just to show a little bit support for the wider community. So safely, if you can't light up your house, of course, you can stick a candle on your windowsill. And as I say, it just might be the little a little virtual hug that your neighbour might need or what have you. So that's the Wave of Light tonight from 7 p.m. And it's part of Baby Loss Remembrance Week, and it's kind of the end of it. OK, so we talked about that earlier in the week, and I tried to make a mental note to remind, and I've achieved that. I remembered. Mariette McFarland joins me now. How are you getting on, Mariette?
Hello. Nice to see you. Nice to talk to you.
Lovely to speak to you as well. Right, now, congratulations. You are an Open University graduate.
Yes.
Okay.
As of yesterday.
Yes, well done. And it's in English literature. When did you begin this degree course?
Well, the Open University course, I've been doing that for 3 years. And I did. It really should have taken me 4, but I put 2 year, did two modules, as they call them, in 1 year. So that sort of shortened us a little bit. mm-hmm. which being 90 as I am, I needed to do, really. Otherwise, I mightn't have finished it at all.
No, I'm sure you would have. Congratulations, because that is another unique part of your achievement. From Derry, and aged 90 years of age. What drove you to go down this path, Mariette, of returning to study?
Well, many years ago, I was at Trinity in Dublin, and I was studying English literature then, and then I dropped out to get married, to be honest, which you'd never be allowed to do now, and nobody seemed to be too fussed about it in those days, and then I thought I always thought I would do it externally. Of course, I didn't, because I had children, four children, and we had a farm, and we in Donegal, and we were busy, and so it just never happened. And then I, my husband died. I was had been looking after him. He was quite ill, and then I had a bit more time. So I thought I might like to do a course of something. And then one of the grandchildren spotted this and got me on got one of her father's friends to write me a reference. So then I got into Coleraine University.
And here we are. But, I mean, and obviously then, you had unique challenges, generational stuff potentially, because you began this this course, but also to maybe weren't as computer literate as you might be, because obviously you were so focused on everything else.
Absolutely not. I could hardly type. I mean, but my daughter-in-law was very good. She practically taught me to type, did teach me to type, and I can now do it very slowly. But everything, it was quite a struggle, because at my age, you don't really do technology very much. I'm a little bit better at it, but I'm not better enough.
Might I ask, if you don't mind, what your loving late husband would think now? And I'm sure he's looking down on you, if that maybe your belief system doesn't align with that, but I believe he is. What would he think now of you being computer literate and a newly qualified graduate in English literature?
I think he'd think it was very funny. I think he'd be quite pleased. I think he would, but I think also he would be quite amused
and proud, I'm sure.
Well, I think so. Yes, okay. I think so.
What do your grandchildren think of all of this?
Oh, they've been so good. They've been really supportive. They've been wonderful. I mean, I think they also think it's quite funny that the granny should be doing a degree, but they've sort of sent me notes for essays. And they've showed me how to access the Open University Library, you know, in words of sort of one syllable that a baby could understand. And, you know, they've written things out for me like that. No, they've been brilliant. They've been really helpful.
Well, with the experience that you've had, what's your advice to anyone who's on the fence about returning to education?
Oh, if you want to, absolutely go for it. The Open University is perhaps easier if you're technically able, which I wasn't to start with. But you can take as long as you like with it. Whereas I suppose, which would be the best thing really, if you have access to any courses or classes in your area, it would be better to go face to face, probably, because it's nice to have contact with other people. But I mean, with the Open University, you can do it in your own time.
Yeah, but you did it quicker than you needed to. So what now, Marietta? Do you rest on your laurels, or what? You know, I mean, you know, you need to find something else to do now.
I don't know if I do. I mean, I am 90, so maybe I could retire.
Okay,
quite entitled to retire.
We're not ready to let you go yet to retirement.
Well, maybe it is quite addictive, actually, if you start learning something. So I've joined a course on creative writing.
Lovely.
So we'll see how that goes. I've only been doing it for 2 weeks, and I'm not sure if I'm very good at it, though. That's the trouble.
Well, it's subjective,
but,
isn't it?
See how it goes.
It's subjective. I just think it's remarkable that, you know, between when you first went into university to the most recent engagement with it, that 70 years has passed and so much life has passed, so many memories and childbirth and the birth of grandchildren and, you know, obviously the loss of your husband. It's astonishing, really, that you've got this education on either side of what's a full life in and of itself.
Well, thank you for saying it. I suppose it is. I didn't think too much about it, really. Mm. And I've enjoyed what I've been doing very much. It's been so interesting reading books which I never would have read otherwise, and just get, you know, you discover all kinds of things which you didn't know before.
Well, I think you've discovered that there might be a book in you, and now you have to get it out, Mariette.
I doubt that. No, I don't even suggest that. That would be, people might expect it, and it's not going to happen, I tell you.
I wonder.
I'm not creative. Okay. I like reading other people's books, but I don't think I'll write one of my own.
Okay, I wonder. Okay, Mariette, you know yourself best. Thank you so much. Congratulations again. It's a wonderful achievement, whether you're 18, 25 or 90. It's fantastic. Thank you so much for chatting to us.
Well, thank you for asking me.
Bye-bye. Take care. That's Mariette McFarland, aged 90 from Derry and has become one of the oldest Open University graduates in Ireland this year, receiving her degree in English literature. Okay. Listen, that's pretty much where we have to leave it on the show today. We were very busy, which is great, but that also means that you might be listening, waiting for your comment and haven't heard it yet. I get through the absolute overwhelming majority of them, and there's some of the topics that are going to run into tomorrow as well. So stay tuned and we'll get your comments out then. But that's where we have to leave it on the show today. Thanks to Caroline Orr, who researched and produced the programme. We'll be back to do it all again tomorrow morning from 9 o'clock.